project bloomed and worked on that for quite a while. And then, are you recording?
I just started, but kind of late.
Oh, it, we can go over it anytime. Probably change next time I tell it. But don't know how to make it smooth. In fact, I talked to Ron King about it this morning. I said, you remember the Harry Arnold thing? He said, oh yeah. And Harry Arnold was the guy, he didn't exactly fire me, but he didn't want me in his group. I was too positive for where he was in the project. Now here's a guy that had no experience whatsoever in product development. He was an electronics guy, but I think it was Mullally thought he was just great. Well, yeah, anybody that, he was a smart guy, no question about that, but as long as you suck up to Alan, why, you know, you're great. So he put him in charge of this project, and so I'm working for him, and so was Rumsey working for him. And every time I pitch him, he'd say, you're too, you know, too enthusiastic about this, tone it down. And I, you know, couldn't, it was just my way. And finally, one day I find myself working at another job because he had traded me for Jim Hutton. And Jim, I really wonder how that went, because Jim Hutton was his own guy too, you know, more so than I was. But, and then he subsequently, I don't remember when, but he passed away. He had some serious health problems, Jim Hutton. But anyway, Harry Arnold, I don't know all the details, but I know that security came and walked them off the premises.
How long after he let you go did that happen?
It wasn't that long, but I didn't. I mean, not because of that.
Right, right.
But what I heard was that he had been told to reduce his staff, and he kind of refused, and he wound up, he locked himself in his office, you know, so they couldn't drag him away, but they came with their master keys and dragged him out of there. Anyway, and, you know, so much of that is second, third hand, and I'm not sure. Ron seemed to know something about it, but he's very discreet about what he talks about. But anyway, so here I am working the engineering side again, and Hammer giving me this assignment, which is opposed by Alan Mullally. And so for, I don't know how long it took me, more than a year, I'm sure. But it involved stuff that I had never done before. You're getting into the part of the company where they design airplane hardware, they certify it, and there are books, there are shelves of books. I mean, without exaggeration, you know, probably, and these are these big binders like this. You know, and I'll bet you there's 4 feet, 4 or 5 feet of these binders. And these are called Design Requirements and Objectives, as I recall, DRNO manuals. And they discuss every aspect of designing and building the airplane. And so in there is a little section where they talk about things getting approved to be produced in the factory, built in the factory. And the whole, I don't think it fitted exactly because they didn't have such a process. But that's what it was. I wrote this process, and you gotta satisfy every group in the company. And that was the thing that was so serendipitous, because people, I mean, there's even a whole process to control how they write the process, to make sure that people like me can't, you know, kind of do what they want. And that that process got kind of, not hijacked, but the gatekeepers were shut out. And it was because a group called Program Management, there was a guy, a second level manager in there, that was supposed to watch over things like this. That was his responsibility. And he had people working for him that actually did the work. And then there was a parallel group up in Everett that were doing the same thing, but since the process would be the same, whether it was in Everett or Renton, the Everett people, they condescended, or what's the word I want? They thought it was beneath them, this thing. It was just too trivial for them to worry about. So would you Renton guys watch over it, you know? So sure, no problem. And in the meantime, the guy in Renton that should have been watching over it was in the process of trying to get a job in sales contract. And he knew that sales contracts wanted this to work, and he knew that Mullally was opposed to it, but he also knew that he was trying to get out of there and go into some place. So he kind of looked the other way and kept his people from looking the other way, looking too closely at what I was doing. And I don't know how he did it, but I know that people that should have been stopping me, interfering with me, it didn't happen. And in the meantime, can I help you?
I'm just gonna throw this away.
You know, I couldn't get secretarial support because what I was doing, strictly speaking, top management in the rent division didn't want me doing. So I wound up typing all this stuff myself, you know, pages. And thank God for computers and what have you. But yeah, I typed all the sections of the DRO and put in steps how to. How does engineering get a chance to review this stuff? You know, you're going to make sure that they're happy, and well, here's how you do this. And
wow.
You know, pricing and legal and just, and I had other things to copy from. You know, I didn't invent this out of the air, but I had to adapt it and you know, make it fit what we're trying to do. And sent it around, and everybody, I don't think most of them knew what they were doing. Otherwise, I think they would have gotten a lot more scrutiny. So they, you know, checked it off. Yes, this is acceptable to engineering. And if it wasn't, then I'd sit down with them and say, what's the problem? You know, what changes do you need? And as long as we could still make it work in the end, why, fine with me. So that was kind of miraculous almost, because like I say, the right people and the right time, and I think a lot of it was that they didn't like Doug Miller, and so if Doug Miller said do this, then do that.
Who was Doug Miller?
Doug Miller was the guy that took over after Bob Hammer.
Oh, right.
Bob Hammer was the director of engineering, and he. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but I know he quit. And it was some kind of a dispute with Mullally. And Mullally then appointed Doug Miller as his replacement. And he was kind of a suck up.
And you reported to Doug Miller?
Well, I did, but I don't know whether it was beneath him or what. I think asleep at the switch. It'd be curious to find out what Mullally said to him after they found out that this was all done and all the T's were crossed and I started, and I know that the people in Everett were furious, but there was nothing they could do because it was had all been signed off, and on the surface it sounds trivial. It was just that they didn't want it to happen in the first place. But
why were they so opposed?
Well, I don't know exactly why. I know that that Mullally's feeling was that nobody else can design airplanes except Boeing. So if you want to put something in an airplane and you want to do it the right way, then Boeing engineering has to do it. And there's no question about it. Airlines can't do it. Nobody else can do it.
Flight dynamics can't do it.
No. And even though it's been approved by the FAA through this STC process, they still say, well, sorry, but we don't recognize it. We don't think you've done it. You haven't looked at everything. You know, you're not as smart as we are. That's the whole attitude. And that's why Mullally said, you know, I've done more to undermine the engineering department than anybody, because no one prior to that time had been able to find a way to install it without them looking it over. And looking it over meant adding tens of thousands of dollars to the cost. And the airline just wouldn't pay it. So in a way, you know, it's small, but without that, the last couple of weeks I was there, when you come to the house the next time, I'll show you that plaque, and there's pictures of me and one of the marketing guys in the cargo compartment, and there's a...
Come in! Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, are you visiting in here? Okay.
Yes.
We're just using it as a private office. What would that look like?
It looked like one of the workers was maybe looking for a room to use for some purpose.
Yeah. So anyway, what was I?
So the plaque with the pictures of everybody.
Oh, exactly. I get this notice to... come down to customer engineering. Now, customer engineering are engineers who sit down with the airline and kind of with an option book, and they decide, the airline decides, well, I want to make sure I have this in there, I want this kind of stuff, I want this in the cockpit, and they're just hundreds of options, and so they sit down and record those, and that builds up the configuration of the airplane. And you cannot offer anything that isn't in that options book. And I forget the MC, master change, I think is what it is. And so in order to offer anything new, anything different than what's in that options book, they need to have a master change. And this is a little out of order here, but basically they couldn't offer installation of the head-up guidance system or the bailout loader or anything else until they had a master change for it. So, let me think. Okay, so I get this notice that there's a meeting in customer engineering. I should have been suspicious because I've never been down there. But anyway, I go down into that corner of the building where great big area, which is all customer engineering. And you know, as I walk in, why is all this to us? And they brought me over to Bob George, who was the customer engineer for Southwest Airlines. And he had this big plaque, and I can't remember what else. And basically thanked me for pushing through doing, you know, what was necessary to get a master change to install that guidance system in the factory in the Southwest Airplanes. And that was a big deal because there was a big pent-up demand for that. And, you know, it's just so silly when you think about it. That's Mullally and those guys. That's their power. And so they lost that power. So now, suddenly, these customer engineers can offer this master change to any airline that wants it. And previously, the airlines, you know, they wanted it, but they weren't going to wait, and they weren't going to pay, you know, exorbitant price for it, so it didn't happen. And now, the airlines could get what they wanted, when they wanted it, at the price they wanted, and as a result, companies like Flight Dynamics, they suddenly were selling these things left and right. They made a bloody fortune.
I bet they did.
And the same with the belly loader. So, they did great, and I got kind of a kick in the butt. You know, I didn't get a raise for 3 years, and I was afraid I was going to get fired, but that's the way it goes. And then instead of getting a big award, which I kind of expected, why, I think he gave me $3,000 or something like that, you know. And then, you know, isn't that enough for you? I said, well, it's a hell of a lot less than I was led to expect. And well, I'll give it to somebody else if you want.
And, oh boy, yeah. You know, so often you read about innovators in any field who never got the recognition in their lifetimes.
Sure.
And it's
well,
so
yeah,
unfair.
Well, I made a lot of money from the belly loader.
Yeah.
I really did. And the Flight Dynamics hired me for one job, a little token. I think they were trying to give me a few bucks or something like that. And I wrote a little report for them and made a few $1,000, but otherwise I never got anything from them. Sure be nice.
Yeah. What would you do with it if you had it, though?
That's right. Just give it to you kids.
I mean, money is a great reward, but the recognition is at least as important.
And
reading what Phil wrote, he talks about the 12 days of Christmas, the big fog, and how, you know, it cost Alaska Airlines almost $3 million, not to mention the safety issues.
Yeah.
To me, that's the big thing. I mean, you know, think of all the lives that you might have saved because of the work you did. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a reward you'll never know. You'll never know the answer to.
Absolutely.
But what a wonderful legacy.
Yeah. And I'm trying not to blow my own horn too much, but I think I accomplished a lot there.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, before the Boeing master change, anybody who wanted the system had to pay Flight Dynamics to coordinate the installation, right? Which means they had to take
the... They had to buy the system from Flight Dynamics. They had to, pay for the STC, the Supplemental Type Certificate, and then they had to find a certified, they used to call them fixed base operator or something like that, a maintenance facility. Sometimes their own maintenance people can do it, but they would have to install it then, and you know that means taking the airplane out of service or something.
Now, when you install something aftermarket in an airplane, does each individual plane have to go through a test procedure with that new system?
Oh, after it's installed.
After it's installed.
Oh, absolutely, you got to make sure everything is working the way it's supposed to, but. But no, I mean, that's all part of the certification, is to do the testing and to prove that it will do what it's supposed to do. And then after you install it in a particular airplane, and you got to make sure it was put in that airplane correctly.
Yeah.
And it's doing what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, and so
big process.
Yeah, I was going to say every plane has to be offline for some period of time during that
sure.
process.
I mean, if you ever see how they tear those things apart, you know, all the panels are down, there's wires everywhere. And I was just reading part of his sales thing when he realized that not only did they need the system installed, he needed all of these digital devices.
Right, they needed
the digital and,
right.
and they're all expensive, very expensive.
Yeah.
And they're all require engineering in itself to install them.
Right.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was just fantastic time, and I can't give Phil enough credit.
Well, I'm glad he's writing the book. It's really good to capture the history.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where does he still live in Oregon or?
No, he lives, he's halfway between LA and San Diego.
Oh, okay. Okay. So a get together would involve people having to travel, unless you did a video conference of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because I wonder how many of the guys are in this area still.
Well, obviously the Boeing guys, if they're still alive. In fact, I read one of them, Carl Lund, was still working. He said he was doing a job in Japan for something, I don't know. And I don't know whether he works for Boeing or whether he's a consultant or what have you.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
Well, it'd be nice to get some credit, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Ron King part of the story at all? No, he just knew some of the players.
No.
Okay.
No, Ron, you know, Ron sold the airplanes, and if the operator happened to want had a guidance system, then when they sat down with the customer engineering people, they brought it into the spec. But no, it's pretty much the early guys that, like you mentioned, Chris Longridge. And I'm not even sure what Chris's function was. He was in sales, and I don't know whether a bunch of sales guys reported to him or not. But again, that was at a time when Boeing wasn't offering it. So, you know, pretty unusual to have a sales guy get involved in it, unless the airline says, I want these airplanes, but I also want that system. And unless you can offer me that system, I ain't gonna buy airline. You know, that's kind of unusual. But maybe it happened, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or, it was so early. Airline didn't even know about these things. It's just, this was a new invention, and
yeah.
You don't think Mom's back, huh?
Well,